I'm Lauren Booth. Welcome to Comment, Press TV's live world affairs programme, the show where you get the chance to have your say on the latest events around the world. This programme comes live from London, but wherever you are, we want to hear from you. And we'll even call you back so you won't have an expensive telephone bill, aren't we nice? George Galloway can't be with us tonight, so you'll be speaking directly to me when you call +44 208 601 4555, or you can SMS me on +44 78 000 80 66, or why not send me an email to comment@presstv.co.uk. I want to hear what you have to say. Well, an American soldier, Jeremy Morlock, the one who posed with the corpse of a young Afghan boy as if it were a hunting trophy, has been sentenced to 24 years in prison on 3 counts of premeditated murder. He told the court, "I lost my moral compass." Some may wonder if the US military even has a moral map with which to use the missing moral compass. Your thoughts? The man known as the scariest in Libya, Moussa Koussar, is now in London. The foreign minister here, William Hague, has said there will be no immunity for Koussar against possible prosecution regarding the Lockerbie bombing. Other political voices say he should be cosseted in order to encourage more Libyan defectors. What do you think? Meanwhile, in Bahrain, family members and human rights officials say that the Khalifa have arrested the country's most prominent internet activist, Mahmoud Al-Yusuf, referred to as the godfather of blogging in the Gulf nation. 250 people reported detained and dozens of others are just missing. So where is Obama's outrage when it comes to unarmed Bahraini protesters being murdered? For that matter, where is the outcry from the Arab and Muslim world? And there's more violence, it looks like, to be visited on the families of the Gaza Strip from the Zionist occupier, as former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has said that an all-out war against the Gaza Strip is now inevitable. So there's lots to talk about. Pick up the phone, send an SMS or an email, and I should state from the very start that any views I express in the next hour are purely my own and are not those of Press TV. This show is not scripted and is broadcast live and is all about you, actually. So why not give me a call now on +44 208 601 4555. It's unbelievable that Libya might turn into another Iraq, but NATO has disagreements, saying that Obama seems to think we've completed the mission, that Libyan's leaders are regressing. But why should we send weapons? That's the big question we're asking today. Should we stay? Disagreements in NATO already there. Tony in London. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello, Tony in London. Welcome to Comment.
Yeah, first and foremost, hi. Nice talking to you again, Lorraine. You do a wonderful job. You, honestly, we really admire the wonderful work you're doing on Press TV. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Tony. What's your comment this
evening?
Right,
now let's go. A few things here, Lorraine. Now, they say they're in Libya to protect the civilians. And Gaddafi's in breach of United Nations resolution. But guess, I mean, lies, I mean, all right, this might be so, but what about Israel in breach of United Nations resolution, not on one, on two, on several occasions, and they say nothing about this? Don't you think, Lorraine, that the writing is on the wall now for, you know, for the declining in American, in U.S. support for the Zionist propaganda machinery and the Arab regime? Isn't it? Aren't we seeing that there is a difference now and an awakening, and they seem to be a sort of a blind eye at the events in the Middle East by the Zionists, the Arab regimes, and the United States of America?
So, Tony, let me summarise there what you're saying as a difference in attitude from the British government, say, towards a Libyan leader who's bombing his people, and the Israeli leadership talking about bombing Gaza, say, well, we have to remember, of course, the British government would say that Israel is our close ally, that we have to support the war on terror. This has always been the British government's line. And in fact, ex-Israeli leader Shimon Peres was in London this week. And talk, of course, here of changing the laws that people wanted to bar Israeli leaders from visiting the UK. But they've been protected by the British government because William Hague would say the Israeli leaders are our allies.
Well, that is correct, but lies. There's people have had enough of this deceit, you know, by our government, the British government, the United States, and the Zionist propaganda machinery. They seem to have got away with it, but now the world is becoming sort of, you know, accustomed to these lies and deceit. I might be wrong. Please feel free to correct me then.
Well, which lies are you talking about? I mean, we do have the Israeli leadership talking about their right to self-protection here, calling Hamas and those who live in Gaza generally a terrorist entity. That's been said this week by Ehud Olmert. We won't tolerate a terrorist entity on Israel's doorstep. Do you not accept their definition that people who fire rockets are terrorists?
Well, I mean, what started all this? I mean, let's go back to what started it. It's just turning onto page 2 when you read a book. We have to go from, you know, from the first chapter, from the first page to see what caused all this. These Palestinians were driven out of their land. Let's be fair, and they were not allowed to return. They were put in refugee camp. Now, when they tried to protest and they found that they couldn't get anywhere and, you know, sort of took up to arms, they were accused of being terrorists. How did they become so-called terrorists?
Can we talk a little bit about Libya, Tony? What do you feel about Gaddafi's ex-henchman coming to the UK and being made comfortable here-ish?
Well, this again, you know, it goes to show I can't at this stage comment on this man who's in the UK. Perhaps they just want to extract information out of him and then give him the kick, you know, give him the boot. I don't know. At this stage, it's very speculative. I wonder what. I mean, he would not have flown from Libya
I'll tell you what. Thanks very much, Tony, for your call. I'm just going to tell you something you might not know there. Apparently, Moussa Koussar spent some time in Tunisia, presumably trying to stay there en route to the United Kingdom. But the Tunisians, you see, under Ben Ali, Ben Ali was a great pal of Gaddafi's. But, of course, the people's freedom in Tunisia has changed that friendship to the old regime. So Moussa Koussar could not be comfortable in Tunisia, and he came to London instead. We're going now to Kevin in Torquay. Welcome to comment.
Hello there.
Welcome, Kevin. What's your comment this evening?
Hello there, Lauren. Nice to speak to you again after last week. Well, pretty much like what Tony said before, this is it's the two-facedness that, they have a no-fly zone over Libya to protect the people, yes, and yet we're trying to get a campaign going on Facebook for a no-fly zone over Gaza.
I've seen that campaign. How many members have you got so far?
You wouldn't believe it. There's thousands of people joining all the time. You know, it's gathering momentum because it's the idea of a no-fly zone is it not to protect the civilian population?
I think the rather disturbing aspect to Britain's involvement in the Middle East permanently is the fact that, for example, some of the weapons being used by the Saudi troops now in Bahrain were manufactured in Britain. Some of that tear gas that causes convulsions made by British companies. It makes you proud, doesn't it, Kevin?
It sickens me being a UK citizen, to be honest. When we hear stuff like this, we feel so helpless to do anything about it. And we, you know, many of us start these campaigns on Facebook, and I'm constantly supporting these like flotillas going to Gaza, basically doing my bit because there's nothing the government will do. Like, I was one of the million plus people protesting against the Iraq invasion, but our voices weren't heard by our government, but they were across the world. We're doing our bit. That's how I see it.
Well done to you, Kevin, for doing your bit. As you say, the people's uprisings around the world are the only thing that will change the world. Thanks very much for joining me today. We'll go now to Mahmoud in Oman. Welcome to comment, Mahmoud.
Hi, Lorraine. Good evening again.
Good evening. What would you like to say this evening?
I have three comments, please, if you don't mind, if you can give me a little bit of time, please.
Go ahead.
All right. I have one about the region, whatever the brutality things which is going on in Yemen and Bahrain. And I think it is not acceptable by any person in our region.
Well, that's interesting.
Number two,
carry on.
Sorry, comment number two is regarding this pastor in the United States who burned the Quran a few days ago. I have a question to the Vatican and to the Western countries. What on earth will happen, God forbid, if we burn the Bible or the Torah in this part of the region? What will be their reaction?
Okay.
Comment number three, please. Hello?
Yes, I'm there. Carry on.
All right. Sorry, Lorin. Comment number three, talking about the Zionism regime in, of course, Israel, of creating an island for the Palestinians. I have a small suggestion to them, if they would like it, that what if we create a small island here for them in this part of the world, and all the Jews of the world that come and join us here? And coexist with us. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks for your comments. I wonder if we can just quickly ask you, well, what has the Oman government said against the activities of the regime in Bahrain shooting at unarmed protesters? Has the Omani government made a comment? Has the Omani leadership made a comment against this?
Unfortunately, no, because the so-called ACCC countries, which does not actually exist. I mean, we haven't had anything concrete for the last 20 or odd years. That's the sad part of it.
Okay, well, listen, thanks very much for calling in. Your comments always interested there from Oman. We'll go now to the Press TV correspondent, Hassan Al-Khatib, who is in Cairo, Egypt, and he has spent some time at the Rafah crossing recently. Hassan, can you hear me? Welcome to comment.
Yes, hello there.
You're in Cairo now. You didn't make it with the delegation from Egypt across the Rafah crossing. What happened to the delegation that was taking cement and was so full of hope in the last 2 weeks, Hassan?
Yes, just to update our viewers, basically last week, 15 Egyptians from Cairo traveled to the Rafah border, and they took with them 10 tons of cement, which they hoped they would take through to the Gaza Strip. And it's been a week since that, from Cairo to the Gaza Strip. And the problem is that the Egyptian authorities kept delaying the delegation. They kept saying, you're going to go through, it's only a matter of time, but, you know, bear with us. So the delegation had hoped that they could go through with the cement, but these delaying tactics was just, if you like, a ploy to discourage the delegation. And as the days went by, some of the delegation, people from the delegation sort of sensed this. Some of them went back to Cairo. And today, what happened was the army had come to the coordinator, the organizer of this whole project, and they told them to basically pack up and leave, because the government were always going to say no to the cement going through, and that they were almost like playing around with them. It seems as if the old regime, the old Mubarak regime, is still present within many sections of the Egyptian authority, especially the Egyptian intelligence agency, which is under the control of Omar Suleiman. He has, you know, great ties with Israel. This is known. So is Tantawi, who is the head of the army. He's got good links with Israel. And even people within the Egyptian government have good links with Israel. So it was always going to be very difficult for the delegation to get to this 10 tons of cement through to Gaza. But having said that, there have been positive developments. And what it did was it put Gaza on top of the agenda for the Egyptian authorities. And as a result of this project...
Okay, great. I take your point there. I'm going to have to cut you up because we have callers waiting. But thank you very much, Hassan. I think the point there is business as usual at the Rafah crossing. Huge disappointment for Egyptian activists for the first time going themselves en masse to take goods to Gaza with a lot of hope. I've been at the Rafah crossing myself several times. You get messed around there by the authorities, and then the army steps in and says you'd better go. So disappointment there for the Gaza people, but change might be coming. Martin from Italy is on the line now. Welcome to comment, Martin. Are you there, Martin? We heard some rustling.
Yeah, I'm here. Good evening.
Good evening. What's your comment for us this evening?
Not much. Just want to talk about Libya and Palestine. You see, like what Israel is talking about, maybe calling 1.5 million a terrorist. It's the same thing to that of Libya. Gaddafi calling almost half population of Libya a terrorist. So the same thing happening in Israel now, calling the Palestine a terrorist, 1.5 million a terrorist. The same thing that of Libya. So what I want to say, the Westerners have taken a very good step in this issue of Libya. Because we can see, we can hear from people calling on that is criticizing Westerners for their action. I'm one among the critics when it comes to Iraq and Afghanistan. But this of Libya, I'm not against it because if they are giving Gaddafi time, he is ready to kill as much as he can. Because this time it's like the Muslims or the Arabs are waking up now. They are no longer in a sleeping slumber. And the youths now want to prove to the world that being a Muslim or an Arab is not a cause. So that is why they have taken the cause into their hands. So if we start waiting for the Arab community or whatever to come and rescue the Libyans, Gaddafi will kill everybody because the Arab nations, the leaders, the whole leaders, you find there, they're all dictators. Nobody is ready to come there because they are just the same thing of that of Gaddafi.
Martin, can I just ask you a question? As you're in Italy, I want to ask you, what's the Italian coverage like of the NATO bombing? Is it positive? Is the Italian thought process that NATO should arm the rebels now, or do they want nothing to do with it?
Come again, it's not very clear.
What does the Italian government or the Italian people feel about NATO's bombing in Libya?
What do they see?
Yeah, what do they feel?
I can't tell you what they feel because me staying here, we all know who Italians used to be. They want to see things happening. They don't want to go forefront. They want to see people doing it before they know what they can do. So automatically, call it Libya, Gaddafi, or whomever is their ally. So it's very difficult for them to go first. You understand? So here they are feeling, maybe I will tell you, they are not very happy how things are going because maybe they are crying of immigrants flowing in Italy. So that is their major problem.
That's a very good point. Thank you, Martin, in Italy. The Italian government apparently now in talks about rehousing Gaddafi when he leaves, about finding him a safe haven. Italy's one of the countries taking a lead in making that suggestion at the moment. We go now to Dawa, in London. Welcome to comment.
Oh, hi, Lauren. Actually, it's a Dawa, it's not a Dawa.
Sorry, Dawa. What would you like to say this evening?
Yeah, well, in my comments is about this Miss Akrisa, who is in came to London yesterday. First of all, obviously, you English and you from here, and you've been here more than me. It's not surprising me for another corrupt politician from other parts of the world end up in London. He's not the first one, and he won't be the last one. What is more surprisingly, the England government has sent a private plane under taxpayers' expenses to the one of the guy, why is his nickname is a killer man, to bring him to London. What kind of government, what the hell are they doing? I can't understand it. If you understand it, could you explain it, please?
Okay, well, I think the government stance here, William Hague, the foreign secretary today, being quite clear, that the government feels in Britain that if we encourage defectors from the Gaddafi regime, that the regime will crumble with less expense to NATO and less expense to the Libyan people. What do you think of that? We're helping the regime crumble by welcoming all of the exiles here.
It just a joke, if this is a guy, obviously I think he's behind the Lockerbie's bomber. Whether he's behind it or not, whether this government is elected by these people from this country, if you ask English people, not a single person would be happy for this government to be in this country. What the hell this government is playing, I can't understand it. I don't think anybody will understand it. And well, let's leave it to William Higgs and David Cameron.
Yeah, well, let's hope they've got a bigger, better plan than they did taking troops, the government before them, into Iraq. But again, that idea of the regime crumbling is an important one. You don't back that, that if Gaddafi's helpers are allowed to be free havens around the world, that it will help to end this war?
Like what you said, that Obama said they're getting their mission worked. But they haven't got a mission. They just rushed to it. They just done it. And neither NATO, neither US, neither UK got any mission. They do not know what they're doing. Whatever they get rid of Gaddafi or not, the loser will be West. Leave it as it is. They've never won it. Just, if you arming these rebels, the guys, it will be same with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan when they used to against Russia, Soviet Union. What they use the gun later on? Against the British troops and American troops. It will be the same with Libya. Well, when we're going to pay the price, like a decade later, and what we can do? Nothing, really.
Duarte in London, thanks very much for your comment there. Well, I'm going to go now to Fatima, who's also in London. Welcome, Fatima, to comment.
Assalamu alaikum, Lauren.
Alaikum salam. What would you like to say, sister?
Just quickly, if I can respond to the previous address, the guy who just spoke a minute ago. I mean, we should encourage each other to do good. And now he's against the NATO to intervene. But what did he want? People to just stay back and the Libyan people to be killed by their own government? And we should have the heart to forgive. Maybe this man is a killer, but at the moment he has withhold himself, be God-conscious, and now get out of the mess before it's too late for everyone. Now, we should encourage that, not to condemn them. And at the same time, bear with me.
That's okay, sister. I can hear the children in the background. It's nice to have you on.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. The other thing is...
it happens to us all, you know. There's times when I'm working and the kids are in the background as well. Okay, Fatima, perhaps call us next week, next time, when the children are in bed, inshallah. Let's go now to Robert in London. Robert in London, welcome to comment. What would you like to say this evening?
And I want to address the issue of the Zionist occupation, because I've predicted that when this movement starts, where the Arab nations are fighting against the present government, that this Zionist movement is going to piggyback on this issue, or this occasion, to fight with the Palestinians and even grab the Temple Mount, because of the desire to build that new temple. So I want to open up a new question. Since we know that the Zionist movement are not the original occupiers of that land, and that they were put there in 1948, will the Arab nations now be open to discuss the issue of who was the previous occupiers? My understanding is that years ago, before this situation developed, the original occupiers were some Hebrew people.
I'll tell you what, that is an enormous and fascinating question, but we're not actually addressing that period in history tonight. I wonder if we can perhaps go back to Libya early on. I was more interested in discussing with you why you thought Israel would be piggybacking while there's a Libya war going on to take action in Gaza. Is that what you were saying? Time for one last comment.
Yeah, let me go back to that. No, apart from Libya, Jordan, all the Arab nations around there, they are having an upheaval right now. And the Zionist regime that never obeys any United Nations sanction, they have never obeyed any, they are going to now perform a very terrorist activity of going after the Palestinians, and the world is not going to do anything. The world is going to sit down idly by and watch Israel kill the Palestinians again, especially the festival that's coming up at the end of April. And they're going to kill, they need the blood then. They're going to do this again, and the world is going to watch. But Libya, yes, let's go and help Libya
Okay, Robert, and we're out of time. Join me for the second part of the program, where there will be more talk on the situation in the Middle East. We'll see you then. Come back soon. Thank you. Welcome back to Comment, presented this week by me, Lauren Booth. George Galloway will be away campaigning in Scotland for a few more weeks, but I promise he'll be back soon. Today we are talking about important subjects. Bahrain, the people there uprising to great international silence. What's to be done about Bahrain? What's to be done about Saudi involvement there? Do you have a view? Give me a call. Meanwhile, in Libya, already we're seeing NATO's takeover from the US. The US making noises about backing off, but a threat of mission creep. The original mission to stop Gaddafi committing a war crime, eliminating thousands of people. That seems to have been accomplished with a no-fly zone. So why are we still there? Your thoughts? And Palestine, once again, a former Israeli leader has said it's time for Operation Cast Lead 2. The people in Gaza preparing themselves mentally and emotionally for another massacre. What do you think? Alex, welcome. I believe you are in Bahrain and you have a report for us. Welcome to Comment.
Good evening, Lauren. Yes. I don't actually have a report prepared, but I'm willing to answer any questions you might have about Bahrain.
Alex, so first of all, tell me exactly which city you're in and what's the position now on the streets?
Sorry, Lauren, I can't tell you where I am. Actually, quite dangerous to do that. It's dangerous for foreign journalists to be here. Three CNN reporters were arrested yesterday. There's a total media blackout here. I'm moving from place to place every day, so... I'm afraid I can't do that.
Talk to me more generally, Alex, from this dangerous situation you find yourself in alongside the Bahraini people. What is the atmosphere like amongst protesters? Is their morale strong or is it being broken?
A little bit of both, to be honest. People here are still defiant. They still want the revolution, the uprising to continue. At the same time, people are very frightened. They're frightened of the midnight raids, which happen every night now. They're frightened of the police and military incursions into the village, which happen two or three times a day, where the police and army come in and start firing effectively randomly at people in the street. So there is a great deal of fear here. And to be honest, people aren't certain that the revolution will succeed. There's every chance that it will be quashed. But people are going to continue fighting peacefully for their rights. Essentially, the government has backed protests into a corner. The more they repress the protesters for democracy here in Bahrain, the more the people in Bahrain feel they have nothing to lose, and the more they feel the revolution must continue.
Do you know anything more about the decimation of mosques and mausoleums that's been going on? There's been some talk of the Saudi troops desecrating shrines and the like.
Yes. Almost everywhere you go in the village of northern Bahrain, outside Manama, you see evidence of this. In the village of Bani Jamra, Saudi troops, I think Saudi National Guard, removed the golden dome from the tomb of the cleric, Sheikh Ali Jamri. They took photos of themselves doing it. They uploaded videos of themselves doing it to YouTube. They're obviously very proud of their actions there. In the village of Ma'amir on the island of Sitra, just east of the capital Manama, I saw evidence of a rampage the Saudi troops had gone on, where they'd defaced Shia imagery, posters of Hussein and Ali and of prominent clerics. They'd just gone throughout the village defacing every symbol of Shiism they could find. People here call the Saudi troops Wahhabis or Puritans, even call them the Taliban. And it's a very real sense that the Saudi incursion here has been an attempt to sectarianize what is essentially a broad-based, largely secular protest for democracy.
It's very hard to see how things can return to normal when you've got a government acting so rapidly against its people. There wasn't even any attempt at dialogue, Alex. What are people saying? They want regime change now.
People here are still committed. People are committed to dialogue as long as it's a meaningful dialogue. I know the king, King Hamad Al-Khalifa, he's promised some form of dialogue, but people here have said he promised that in 2002 and nothing came of it, and look at the situation now. So people demand real change. Certainly I was in the village of Sa'a this afternoon for the burial of a 15-year-old boy. He was killed by, I believe, rubber bullet shot into his face yesterday. And there's a crowd of 2,000 people there, and they're all chanting, down with Khalifa, down with Khalifa,
okay, Alex,
down with the regime.
We don't want to take any more of your time because you're in a dangerous situation there, and thanks very much for joining us with that update from Bahrain. I'm going to go now to Karzai, who's in London. Welcome to comment. What would you like to say this evening?
Hello?
Hello, Karzai. It's Lauren Booth. You're welcome to comment.
I'm Karzai, not Karzai. Oh, good. Hi, Lauren. You're the great. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, brother. What would you like to say?
My concern is this from Afghanistan. American, this bloodsucker, killer, looter, rapers are true. Leave Afghanistan till 2014? I don't think so. Because such invasion of such stupid American in NATO is there became culture. Now Obama says he will leave Afghanistan 2022. He corrupted the stupid Karzai, his puppet. One of the top countries in the world in corruption. One of the top. Everybody, this innocent Americans, the young children and UK soldiers, the youngs, they leave their lovers and they'll be killed there. Stupid this present government and this present...
I'll just stop you there because we've just been looking at some pictures, really disgraceful, disturbing pictures of what a whole unit, in fact, of American troops stand accused, members of this unit, of killing people for sport in Afghanistan, taking photographs and filming it, creating lies on the ground that this was a military action. And one trooper just has 25 years in prison in America. I wonder if you think that's enough or whether it's endemic. I'm asking everybody there to call, comment, and we can talk more on that. Right now I'm going to go to Habib in Southampton. Welcome to comment, Habib.
Hello, good evening, Laura. Good to talk to you.
Thanks. Good evening. What's your comment?
Laura, actually, I would like to talk about Bahrain. What is happening in Bahrain is really ridiculous, and also it is the clear violation of human rights. It is the result of the American prison in Bahrain, because that's why American supporting the Bahraini regimes. If they didn't have a base there, they wouldn't unlikely to support them. But the people in Bahrain, inshallah, they're very united and very strong. They will defeat Ali Khalifa and Ali Saud.
Do you have any personal links to Bahrain, or is this a feeling that you've developed watching the scenes there?
Well, I have a friend in Bahrain. I've been actually in Saudis a few weeks ago. What I've seen in both Saudis is a very crazy fascist regime which don't respect the right of minorities and the right of freedom of speech. They don't respect anybody. They're just a bunch of liars, you know. I have a friend in Bahrain. I keep talking to them, and I'm very sure, actually, alhamdulillah, God willing, these people will win, definitely.
Okay, thanks very much for your comment there in Southampton. We go now to Cambridge in the United Kingdom. And to Anna, welcome to comment, Anna.
Oh, good evening.
Good evening. What would you like to discuss this evening?
I would like to discuss the Libya issue. Good evening.
What would you Yes, go ahead. What's your comment?
I feel very hurt sometimes because people seem to blame the United Nations, America and UK.
Anna, I'm just going to pause you there because you have your TV on in the background. You might need to turn it down. Otherwise, there's an echo down the line.
Hello.
So can you take a moment to do that?
Hello.
I think we might have problems with Anna there. Anna, can you hear us or turn the TV down perhaps?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, well, I hope that's better. So, yes, Libya and NATO's work there.
Yeah, people seem to blame them, but in real life, people are suffering in Libya. I was so hurt when I saw that woman who was raped, things done to the press of the world to see, just a tip of the iceberg. That means a lot going on underground. And it's not fair for some people. As long as they are comfortable in their homes, they don't care what is happening to people there.
So, Anna, let me just ask you quickly, with the awfulness that you've witnessed on television about women being raped and attacks on civilians in Libya, do you think that NATO forces should stay, should stay there until Gaddafi's completely gone?
Yeah. Okay. They should support the struggle because Africa is a lovely continent. But because of these dictators like Gaddafi, Mugabe, you name them all, they make that continent bad.
I don't think you'll find many people disagreeing with that statement. Thanks very much for joining us, Anna. We'll go now to Dublin, a lovely place where we hope to hear from Fola. Did I get your name right?
Yeah, hello, yeah, you're right. Yeah, good evening.
Good evening, welcome to comment.
Yeah, please, I would just like to, say something on the revolution going on the Arab world, yeah, which I'm really, really much in support. But on the issue of, hello?
Yes, I can hear you, carry on.
Hello?
I can hear you.
And on the issue of Libya, I'm so surprised at the stage, the way everything is going on in Libya now. The Libyan has to be very...
Oh, I think we might just have lost our person in Dublin there. So maybe we'll come back to Fola later. And what we were talking there about was the entire Arab revolution. We were touching on it. But I think we're going to go and talk about US soldiers in Afghanistan with Mel in Wales. Welcome to comment. Well, Mel?
Hiya, Lauren. It's Mel from Wales. I do apologise because I've got laryngitis. But I was so appalled by what I saw about the US soldiers killing those poor Afghani youths. It broke my heart. Mm. And that is all we want to see on film. What is going on behind the scenes, Lauren? And how can we fight against that? And will we ever see justice against them soldiers who kill innocent people?
Mel, you feel, obviously, as we all do, a sense of revulsion seeing individual soldiers, as they're called, although it could be entire units, attacking civilians for sport. Does it mean that you are then able to support NATO and America as a part of NATO in Libya, for example, or do you have a sense of fear about any actions now that involve America?
So what can we do, Lauren? How can we make the nation realise what is really happening?
Keep advising people to watch for Press TV, but also other alternative news sources, because, well, Mel, do you feel you have enough information about what Americans and the British troops do on the ground in Afghanistan and what we've done in Iraq?
No, I don't, Lauren. Only other than I see on Press TV, I try and tell my colleagues in work. They don't see. They only see BBC, ITV, and it breaks my heart. So
yeah.
What can we do?
Keep talking to them. I think you're already doing the right thing. You're talking. Well done, Mel. Thanks very much for calling in, love. Mel from Wales there talking about the US soldiers in Afghanistan. The US very keen to pass this over all the time as individual soldiers committing atrocities in their units, whether it's Afghanistan or whether it's in Fallujah. But what's become clear is that the murder of Afghani citizens, including children, by this unit that took photographs of them for sport, as if they were some sick kind of souvenir, was not just one or two soldiers. The whole unit was aware of it. Perhaps you'd like to discuss this further. Meanwhile, we can look again to Gaza Strip, where the people there have to be prepared for Operation Cast Lead 2. call if you've got anything to say on those two topics. But right now, I'm pleased to say we might be going to Johnny Miller, who's in Benghazi.
Hi there. Hi, Lauren.
OK, Johnny, I can hear you. I'm going to wait for your latest update from Benghazi. Thank you.
It's been a more quiet day today in Benghazi. Yesterday, there was a lot of fear in the city as Gaddafi troops made huge advances across northern Libya, and they made their way, as it was reported, to the west gate of Ajdabia, which is a city only 150 kilometers west of Benghazi. So they weren't too far away from where I am now. However, since there's been more NATO bombing raids, the rebels have been able to push the Gaddafi troops further back. We now understand that they're around the town of Brega, which is around 250 kilometers west of Benghazi. So it's a real tit-for-tat battle, a ping-pong battle between Gaddafi forces and rebels as they fight for towns across northern Libya. NATO bombing is key here. The Gaddafi forces have much better equipment, rockets and tanks, etc., that they can force the rebels back. When NATO bombs them, then the rebels are able to advance. So a quieter day here in Benghazi, but the battle rages on.
The rebels are disparate groups. Is there one call, for example, for NATO to begin supplying them arms, or are they divided on what NATO should be doing in Libya?
Well, I wouldn't say they're divided. The people and the National Council are very supportive of Resolution 1973. They're very supportive of the air raids. I went to a hospital today in Ajdabia, which is just close to the front. At the hospital, eight people were brought in. There were eight casualties overnight. Seven of them, we found out, were from collateral damage, as the doctor put it to me, killed in effectively a NATO airstrike. So civilians are getting killed by NATO airstrikes. But the doctor, who I wanted to say this on camera, was very nervous about saying this on camera because he said he supports the NATO airstrikes. You know, I don't want this to be the story. I don't want the story to be that civilians are getting killed by NATO forces because we support the NATO troops. And if the NATO airplanes weren't here, Gaddafi forces were liable to do a lot worse damage to civilians if they weren't here. So they're united in the support for airstrikes. They're also united, though, in their agreement that ground troops shouldn't be here. There are one or two dissenting voices on that line, but overwhelmingly they don't want ground troops. They say that they can win this war on their own. However, after seeing the rebel army in action, it's clear that they are very under-equipped, and they are calling for better weaponry, anti-tank guns and more heavy weapons.
Johnny, there was a comment made in the US on Fox News, on a news channel there, a very right-wing news channel, by an American spokesperson saying, who are the rebels and are Hezbollah and outsiders getting in amongst the rebels, raising that sort of spectre of insurgency? OK, well, I think we've lost Johnny there. He's doing a great job for Press TV in Benghazi, and he's actually just got back from Manama as well. Thanks very much for that. We're going to go now back to London, to Kobe in London. Welcome to comment. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Kobe in London, welcome to comment.
Thank you for having me. I just have a little to say. I've been following very closely the happening in Libya, and initially, it started with the rebels requesting for a no-fly zone. They promised they would be able to handle Gaddafi if they are given the no-fly zone, only for us to hear them now requesting for arms. And who knows, if the arms backfire, they will now request for ground troops. And this whole thing will become a full-blown war again, just as we have in in Afghanistan and in Iraq. My own take to this is, I would prefer a political solution to this, and the rebels should not be armed. They should look for a diplomatic means of convincing Gaddafi and his government to leave power without any further bloodshed. I think that would be better off.
Well, I think that's a very reasonable political argument. In that case, are you supportive of Gaddafi supporters then coming to London, going to other capitals, being invited to leave Gaddafi so that his regime crumbles? Do you think that's the way forward?
What I think the best way is now, if Gaddafi is very wise, he would know there's no way for him to survive. He could definitely cannot fight the whole world. But if a man knows, definitely, if he leaves power, he will be persecuted, sent to the international courts, and all those eventually will be arrested for a long time or even killed. He will prefer to remain in his country and die there. So basically what I think is, if there's any way there could be some negotiation for him to leave power, at least maybe a way of leaving power to another country for asylum, I think he will be very much happy to do that. That's my take about that, yeah.
That's a very good comment. Thanks very much, Kobe, there in London. Amrullah now in London. Welcome to comment, Amrullah.
Salaam alaikum.
Alaikum salam. What would you like to say this evening?
My first question is, why Western people are spreading war in the whole world and work double standard? And the second one is, how many Osama bin Laden in the world? Firstly, why they gave weapons to the Arab people to crack down their own people? And my question, the second question is all Arab leaders have link with Western leaders? If not, why first of all they took weapons from the Western people? I saw William Hague, he himself said, I give weapons to the Libyan Gaddafi leader and Bahraini leader and Saudi Arabia. If they don't have a link or, you know, friendship with the Western leaders, so why they first of all took the weapon from them? And the second question from to the Western people, why first you give the weapon to the Gaddafi to crack down your people, your own people, and kill your own people, and do not listen to them. The Western people, if they want Gaddafi to step down or resign, they should not give a weapon to them and say, get out from the country and leave the country to the people.
Thanks very much, Amrullah. I'm going to cut you off there because we have time for one last caller, and it's Asma in London. Welcome to comment. What would you like to say? We're very short on time, Asma.
Yes, I can see that, and I might not get all what I want to say. And anyway, assalamu alaikum. Well, we have been here before when the Americans were backing the Taliban back in Afghanistan. They fought the Russians and won. Then they were freedom fighters, and the Americans claimed they were the only superpower, and now the Taliban is the enemy. The same thing is happening now in Libya, because the West cannot be trusted. They'll do the same thing again. And these so-called Arab leaders never learn their lessons. And in Bahrain, it's not a question of Shia or Sunni. These so-called royal families all across the Middle East will kill any Muslim that got in their way, because they are so rude and not fit to be in charge of the
world. And that's it. I'm afraid that's all we have time for tonight. Thank you very much to all our callers, and we will see you again next week on Comment.
Hello, if you just comment your name and the face of your account number, and just make sure that your television volume is set to 0.
0, 0.